the debate over needle exchanges. Should they be limited, and if so, how? Live dealers at table games, a new plan for a new soccer stadium, and Susan Brooks says no to a run for U.S. Senate. That plus a fight over a Pence must go sign, Andrew Luck in the General Assembly, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 24, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Democrats in the state Senate criticized the approach being taken by the Pence administration to address the health crisis in Scott County. It's an approach that calls for a 30-day needle exchange that can be renewed in that county only. Democratic leader Tim Lannon threw his support behind a bill that would permit 23 counties with the highest rates of hepatitis C to create their own needle exchanges. It's a reaction to the 142 cases of HIV that have appeared in Scott and Jackson counties as a result of needle sharing by intravenous drug users. Lannon and other Democrats want a statewide approach to the problem, but the Pence administration is opposed, and so are GOP leaders in the General Assembly. Here's Lannon.
There's a three-part comprehensive approach that's needed to address this crisis, and that is testing, treatment, and needle exchange.
There is a commissioner of health that's appointed to be in charge of these issues, and that's where I think the decision-making, ultimate decision-making should lie.
Going to a statewide program when we really don't know what we're getting into might be hasty, but...
What should the General Assembly do? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanitz, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is this a partisan issue?
Oh, I think it's an ideological issue is what it is. And, you know, this ought to be driven by the medical facts. And the health commissioners in each one of these counties ought to be able to determine whether they need to have a needle exchange or not. But this is on the governor's listening to the same people who told him to pass RFRA. And it's the same kind of ideological backlash. We can't be for needle exchanges. We can't be for marriage equality. It's silly. The doctors ought to be deciding this. This is a health crisis issue for Indiana, and ideological concerns should take the back burner.
Well, we are seeing some Republicans in the General Assembly, including some key Republicans, who are in support of wider needle exchanges. And Greg Zeller, the Attorney General, spoke up this week. He thinks that there should be the opportunity for other counties to have needle exchanges if they want.
Well, let's start with the fact that it was the governor who initiated the needle exchange program in Scott County and just extended it another 30 days. So. He is dealing with that crisis in Scott County, and they're trying to get ahead of it. As far as the amendments are concerned that have been offered, Representative Ed Clair, the Health Committee Chairman, offered the amendment that would extend it, would allow county organizations to make an appeal to the state health department, which would make a decision. And that amendment seems reasonable to me as they move forward. I think the Attorney General sees this as a health crisis, as everybody does, and they got to get ahead of it instead of chasing it. We can't be chasing it county to county after it happens. In every kind of health crisis of this kind, you try to get ahead of it so that you can slow it down or stop it. That's what they're trying to do here. Hepatitis C is an indicator, and you can go to those counties where you have high cases of that, use that as the lever, if you will, to start the process of trying to do it county by county. And I think that's a reasonable approach to this. So I think there's worry that when the prosecutors came out and said, you know, we're against this because
Indiana Prosecutors Council,
we think it looks like we're soft on illegal drug use. Nobody is soft on illegal drug use. Nobody's saying that. But in this situation, to try to keep people from dying,
right,
you got to get ahead of this instead of chasing it. And that's what's been proposed here by Ed Clare and others.
And yet you heard House Speaker Brian Bosma and President Pro Tem David Long in the intro there. They're not excited about this. And Long has put Brant Hirschman in as the point man in the Senate, where Pat Miller, who is the Health Committee chairman there, has been supportive of wider needle exchanges. It doesn't look like it's going that direction.
Seemingly not, but Pat Miller, of course, comes from a medical background. That was her nursing profession. She has, I think, an understanding of some of the issues, the medical issues, aside from the ideology or the politics of it, as do other members of the House and Senate. There are several people who come out of a medical background. So my sense is that those individuals should be talking to those that to the laymen and lay women in the in those organizations.
Well, Greg Zeller says he's speaking out not just as Attorney General but also as co-chair of the Prescription Drug Task Force in this state, and he says everybody on that task force tells him that you need needle exchange.
And I do think the Zeller announcement was very important in this discussion, because it did come on the heels by a couple of hours, the formal statement on the heels of the testimony and the position announcement of the prosecuting attorney's counsel. So it does give some political cover to those who would be worried about being accused of being somehow soft on crime.
And in the meantime, Kentucky has given the okay to needle exchanges, and the Louisville Metro Council voted unanimously to have needle exchanges there, because they're worried about this problem coming to them.
Right.
We look like we're out of step.
Yeah.
Well,
surprise.
I would note that those things are happening because they perceive this as a health problem and a health issue. And it does go well beyond Scott County. I mean, Kentucky, smartly I think, is taking a proactive approach. But you also have big problems in metropolitan and rural areas. Lake County's got a major problem with this. Marion County's got a major problem with this. But it is also, it's not an urban or rural thing. It's almost a poverty or an economic thing. A lot of people who are affected by this are low income. They don't have many prospects. And so they use a lot of drugs, and they use them in a way that's dangerous to their health long term because of the dirty needles and the things that they use. I think Mike's exactly right. We need to be proactive about this. And I do think it's a health issue. And I think the state should do what it can to protect its citizens and then improve the economy. Do the things that they say they're going to do and make the programs and implement the policies that help improve the economy.
Yeah, to your point about proactivity, it seems that where government intersects most closely with the problem, i.e. the county health officials, that by cutting out the middleman or having to go and write the proverbial home office for permission, even if we get to that point, it seems odd. I don't know what the policies are in most states, but it seems odd that you wouldn't have the ability for local elected officials and local fiscal and medical officials to make those decisions on a county-by-county basis.
In fairness to the two leaders that you used in your setup here, David Long was talking about a statewide program. Nobody is talking about a statewide program right now. They're talking about doing this based on need by counties,
yeah,
and that's what they're talking about doing.
Right.
He referred to it statewide. They are not ready to do a statewide program. They need to do it based on where you anticipate the problem's going to be, and that's how they're dealing with it. And also, in Speaker Bosma's case, he made reference to the state health commissioner, and a system that's being supported by most people right now would call for the county health commissioner to go to the state to get the permission to do this. And that's a reasonable
approach. But that does slow it down.
It doesn't slow it down more than two days.
Because the health commissioner is appointed by the governor. And that's a problem when ideology trumps medicine. And why county health commissioners ought to have the ability to decide it on their own. But you're right about the resources in Scott County and areas like that. It's poverty. It's also no drug treatment programs, no substance abuse programs, and very few medical professionals in the county as well. And the state needs to take some steps in that regard.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: do you support needle exchanges? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, only in Scott County. Last week's question: will there be a contested GOP primary for governor in 2016? 76% said yes, 15% said no, 8% said at least three candidates will run. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Lawmakers are still struggling with a plan to permit live dealers at the table games in the Shelbyville and Anderson Racinos. A conference committee must decide if live dealers should be permitted immediately as the House voted, or in 5 years as the Senate voted, or not at all. Casino owners say that live dealers would lead to the creation of as many as 150 jobs, and they say would not amount to an expansion of gambling. John Keeler of Centaur Gaming.
We estimate the state would make between $8 million and $9.6 million in wagering taxes per year, that our local communities would make somewhere between $686,000 and $823,000 per year.
Mike McDaniel, will Centaur get its way?
Well, let me start by saying that I'm representing them in the legislature, so I have a dog in this fight, so to speak. So it's in conference committee, the question is whether or not you add live dealers to these table games at the two racinos. And to me, and obviously, I don't see that as expansion, because you already have those games in place. The only difference, the only thing that's going to expand is the number of people you employ.
The way Centaur is framing the argument is that gambling revenues are down, and unless you reach the high water mark for revenues, you're not expanding gambling.
I don't see it expansion, because those games already exist. You know, and all you're doing is adding to the employment rolls and a couple of counties, and I think that's a good thing. But what you need to do here is do whatever you can to strengthen this industry overall. And the bill that they have in front of them right now does a lot to do that, but just doesn't do enough to do that.
Yeah, but you've got Hollywood Casino from Lawrenceburg saying it would cost them jobs.
Well,
it would hurt other casinos.
There are some casinos that are going to fail. The expansion of gambling in the surrounding states, we knew that from the beginning, that they wouldn't all survive. But I frankly think this whole expansion of gambling argument is ridiculous. I mean, it's led to the most ridiculous conclusions, like the boat and the moat and all of this nonsense. Mm-hmm. Once the state decided to have a statewide lottery that the state originally operated, now I know a vendor does, we crossed that Rubicon, okay? We said we were going to have gambling here. We ought to make it as effective as we possibly can. You can't be half a virgin, okay? We're into gambling. We might as well do it effectively.
Yeah, and there's an Indian casino coming. So,
that's right.
Part of the argument here is that you need to make the existing casinos stronger, or they won't be able to compete with the Pokagon Band of the Potawatomi, who are planning a South Bend casino.
Right, and that South Bend casino, unless the state is able to negotiate some kind of a compact with that tribe, then the state won't get any revenue from that. It all go to the tribe. So,
And if the governor enters into a compact, that's endorsing.
Oh, is he expanding gambling? Oh no!
I agree with you completely on this expansion notion, Anne.
It's just
like,
silly.
It's here. You like the revenue coming from it.
Yeah.
You can't have the revenue without the gambling, so, you know, what's the point? Right.
Yeah. State Senator Luke Kenley said this week that there can be no permanent solution because of the way the landscapes keep shifting.
That may be the case, and that's why I think you have if you look at what the House offered up and what the Senate offered up, you know, one said let's do a limited experiment, if you will, with this. Now I think the cap was at 24 machines, which would be
24 12 live dealers, and
12 at each, right? I don't think it's 24 right. at each, so it'd be a total of 24.
It may not be 12 each, but it'll be a total of 24. And what Centaur has said, though, is that they'll still come back in 5 years and ask for more.
Well, right, and that gets to the Senate version, which, of course, said we're not doing anything for 5 years.
Right.
Come back at that time. But the problem here, you mentioned the landscape, and a couple people alluded to this. You have three types of gambling establishments that are recognized by the state of Indiana. And who knows, once we have a Native American
entry into the Derby. But right now you've got French Lick and West Baden Springs, which is one operates
land-based.
Under one set of rules,
right.
Traditionally, the riverboat casinos and then the racinos. So you, some people over the course of the history of gaming here in the state would get subsidies that others didn't, or they get tax benefits that others didn't, or you can build on land or you have to operate. So until, and this is pie in the sky, I don't think you can ever make everybody put them on equal footing, right. But it's a recipe for these kinds of disputes when you have three different categories of licensure.
Well, it's important to remember the live dealers are in both versions of the budget. It's just a matter of when. The House version
right.
would allow
right.
some now. The
right.
Senate version waits 5 years.
Right. Moving on, the Indy 11 soccer team may get a new stadium after all if a new proposal gains traction at the State House. Earlier this session, the House of Representatives gave approval to a new stadium, then the state Senate said no. The Senate instead backed renovations to Carroll Stadium at IUPUI. In a conference committee meeting this week, lawmakers discussed a plan to tear down Carroll Stadium and build a new stadium on the same site. Tom Morrison of Indiana University.
If you want to build for professional soccer or an event-type facility, it's probably going to necessitate building almost a new stadium on that footprint that's probably between $50 and $60 million.
John Ketzenberger, is a new stadium more dream than reality at this point?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a lot further along at this point than I thought it would be, because I didn't think their original plans had much of a chance. So the fact that they're having this negotiation at this point of the session, I think, says a lot for their prospects. Tearing it down seems fairly aggressive. That track has history. That track can be important to...
And IU wants to keep it.
And it can be important to the city for its ability to draw world-class events and trials for the Olympics to it. So I think they have to work those details out. But the fact that they're still talking is impressive.
Well, the really real key of what came out of this is that the state is saying, we'll give $20 million. It's going to cost 50 to 60, and you got to find the rest. And they're saying to the soccer team.
Right. I mean, soccer team, city, somebody other than the state has to come
right.
up with it.
IU isn't offering much, though.
Right. Well, in fact, said as much that there might be
some.
I think they talked about funding at the margins, which is not going to get you from 20
right.
million to 60
right.
million. But I think John's exactly right. For a franchise that's only been around now
in its second season,
to be this far along, where is your starting point? As your starting point, you're looking at $20 million of upfront investment, effectively, from the state. That's a pretty good position. We've talked before. Indianapolis Motor Speedway has been around for more than a century, and when they tried to get funding for some similar improvements, it was several trips to the State House over a period of time to get something similar to this.
Will there be a stadium?
I think there's going to be some hybrid of it. I think the money will be put aside for Indiana University at that amount, $20 or $25 million. And then it's up to the people that want to have a professional soccer team here to decide whether or not they want to come up with the rest of the money. But at the end of the day, even if they do that, the property belongs to Indiana University.
That's right.
I think that's what makes the offer so much stronger, is the fact that it would be part of IU and could
be
used for other purposes. I think that's a big selling point.
Congressman Susan Brooks will not run for the U.S. Senate. The Carmel Republican announced this week that she will pass on the opportunity to run for the GOP nomination in 2016 for the seat being vacated by Dan Coats. She gave serious consideration to a bid. So far, Republican Eric Holcomb is the only declared candidate. John Schwanes, how big will the GOP field get?
Not nearly as big as I expected. I think my sense was back when we first heard that Dan Coats was not going to seek re-election, and even weeks before, when there was speculation, it was everybody and his cousin wanting to go
to the
gate.
Most of the congressional delegation.
But exactly, and now
Jackie Walorski's backed away. Susan Brooks is backed away.
Now you still have Todd Young, I believe, who might be interested, and said he's raised, I think, $400,000 in the first quarter, which takes him up to over $1 million in his war chest. So I wouldn't say it necessarily is Holcomb's solo.
I think you're looking at Todd Young. Marlon Stutzman is likely to get in.
Be as big the field that we, it's not 14
you'll
people.
You'll have three or four people looking at it. I think what happened is that a lot of people, when they were surprised by Senator Coates' decision, thought, oh, this would be a tremendous opportunity. And then they started to think about it, and they realized, okay, we've got all of these seats, and if everybody's in a primary, we risk that. And I think a lot of cooler heads probably prevailed and did some talking to people and helped them understand what their options were. And so you're going to end up with, I think, three or four people in the race.
And there's going to be another Senate race in 18. Joe Donnelly up for re-election. Does it make sense for a Republican to wait for an opportunity to
you
face
mean,
Joe
like
Donnelly?
Susan Brooks?
Yeah.
I thought it made sense. I thought she was the strongest candidate, and especially in a field of three or four men. I thought it was going to be her nomination, and she would be the strongest Republican. So any Democrat seeking that nomination would be energized by her decision. Because we could wind up with who knows who.
Are you making your announcement? Is this your no?
No, thanks.
Oh, okay.
Party unity is too much to ask for here.
Well, it's paring itself down, which I'm glad to see. The last thing I wanted to see is to have at least three or maybe four congressmen give up seats to go run for the
United
States.
I think that would be fun, Mike. You're not doing this the right way.
I'm sure you do. But in the long haul, that would not be good for the party, and we may still end up with two, at least two in it. I hope that's not the case, quite frankly. But if we do, we do. But Susan would have been a great candidate. But I think she's decided that she wants to hold on to that seat, and I think she'll be in that seat as long as she wants to have it. But the open United States Senate seats don't happen very often.
Honest to goodness.
And they're awfully appealing.
And that's an opportunity for a lot of people. And so you're going to see some serious contenders.
All right. We've told you about the Pence Must Go signs that are showing up in yards around town. They're in response to the RFRA controversy. And police are now looking for a man who apparently doesn't agree with the message. They say he pulled up to a home in downtown Indianapolis, grabbed a sign from a yard, and tossed it. When a neighbor confronted the man, police say the suspect pushed him with his vehicle. Police say the man got out of his car then and punched the other man in the mouth. Dennis Wright lives nearby.
Either. I mean, that could have been very harmful to him to have somebody try to attack you with your car and then attack you later.
And Delaney, Pence must go. Are those fighting words?
Oh, there's going to be a fight about it, and I want to set the record straight on this. There's absolutely no truth to the rumor that the driver of that car was Mike Pence. Absolutely no truth to it at all. But you have to wonder, as he drives into the office.
I don't think the state police let him drive.
Yeah, if you drive into the office, as he does, with a driver, and he gets to look out the window, how many of those he passes on his way downtown?
Still fallout from RFRA taking place. The governor appointed a new communications director this week, Matt Lloyd, who was his communications director when he was in Congress.
Good choice. He works with Matt Lloyd for a long time, trust him. Matt's very professional about what he does. Kristi Denault did a good job for him while she was there, but she wants to go spend time with her triplet boys and her daughter, and certainly understand that. So I think Matt Lloyd was a good choice, bringing him back from Washington, D.C., where he worked with him for a long time. Somebody, you got to have somebody in that job that you feel strongly about, that you trust, and you know it's going to be professional about it, and he will be that.
That's all fine, but it isn't the messenger that's the problem here. It's the message.
Yeah, and yet we're going to have the Baptist Ministers Alliance is going to show up at the State House Monday and ask that RFRA be reopened.
Right.
When? Monday?
Yeah.
A little late.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think the timing is the important thing here, Mike. It's the message that's being carried forward. And the governor has found himself now with the fix on the wrong side of both our arguments on this. His supporters are upset because they feel like he's turned on them. And the people who wanted this fix aren't satisfied because it doesn't go far enough.
Finally, state lawmakers had the chance to hear from a special guest this week. Andrew Luck appeared in both the Indiana House and the state Senate. The Colts quarterback is trying to raise awareness for a program called Change the Play. It's a health and fitness initiative developed by Riley Hospital with Luck's help. So far, it's reached 20,000 kids in 100 schools.
And Change the Play is all about empowering the kids in our community, our state, to take on their health and have fun as they do it. And that, to me, is the key. Because, you know, no kid's going to do anything that's not fun. I'm not going to do anything that's not fun. I'll tell you that.
Mike McDaniel, is it okay for lawmakers to be starstruck?
Yes, absolutely. It happens. I mean, there are people, too.
It happened a lot at the State House
this week. Well, I mean, that always happens. I can remember when we brought I remember bringing Peyton Manning there when we were trying to help get the stadium done.
Right.
And how that went.
And Tony Dungy.
And Tony Dungy. I mean, that's a natural thing. But Andrew Luck is the perfect spokesperson for this program. Very articulate guy, very smart, handles himself beautifully. And it was a good day at the State House. People from both parties couldn't wait to meet him and shake his hand. And some of them, I was surprised they let him finish speaking before they asked him to sign jerseys and helmets and everything else. So,
I think it's a great use, use of his persona. I mean, if he can inspire those kids to get out, get up off the games and the television and get out and physically exercise, it's wonderful.
Maybe return the favor. Maybe a few of the lawmakers could go to the locker room and do a little surprise visit. Maybe then the players will all be agog.
Sure. That's maybe, Indiana we can review
maybe
for
we
this.
Maybe we can get them to exercise.
Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible. We'll be right back.